Blog Talk Radio.
Fans, this is QT Vokes coming at you with another Sunday edition of Turnbuckle Turmoil. At this time, I'd like to thank the guest we had on this past Friday, Wild Lyle. Of all the wrestlers we have ever interviewed, he's the only one I know of who has run a 50-mile ultramarathon. Sign Guy is still on assignment in Indiana for Hoosier Pro Wrestling, I believe. He's giving a seminar today. Well, Sign Guy might be flying back to SeaTac Airport in about an hour, and boy, will his arms be tired. Got to throw that old standard joke in there. Today, we have on with us wrestling manager Daryl Rose, and we are here to confirm if he has ever arm wrestled Jerry Wilson. And if he has defeated Jerry Wilson, did Jerry Wilson then have to drink a shot of Fireball whiskey? Daryl, welcome to the show.
QT, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very well on this Sunday. Very sunny and warm for this part of the Northwest in November.
Not here. No.
Oh, yes. I hear that you guys have already had some snow.
Already had some snow, and I'm not going any further with what I was going to tell you. But, yeah, we've had snowflakes, put it that way.
Oh, wow, okay. All right. Well, Daryl, since it's your first time on the show, you get the standard first-timer's question. What got you started in this crazy business?
You mean the wrestling business?
Yes.
All right. I got to give you a hard time. Sign Guy told me to.
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, about 5-6 years old, I started watching the WWA wrestling around town here in Indianapolis and up in Chicago and around in this area, and fell in love with it. Watched the Dick the Bruiser organization that he owned with Wilbur Snyder, and they just had some great characters, great wrestling. I went to the Fairgrounds Coliseum in the 60s and watched some of the live shows, and that just got me hooked on it. And from then on, I just did a lot of TV watching, and any time they were in town, if I could go, I went.
Wow. Well, I know Sign Guy has told me that the first match that his father took him to was he saw Dick the Bruiser in action. Made quite an impact on him.
He's the guy that looks like a normal wrestler. I don't see those guys anymore. They're cute and clever and, you know, just but HPW, where I've been down at the last 3 years or so, it's old school wrestling. And we do a lot of crazy stuff down there, and a lot of the guys look the part. Some don't, but they get beat.
Oh. Wow. Now, when you were 6 years old, you would have been starting first grade around then. Did you have a group of boyhood friends that set up a wrestling ring in your backyard, and did you hold wrestling matches?
Not at 6 years old, no. We did when I got into high school. Of course, I was around 13, and I graduated at 14. But anyway, I was in a band. I had to make some money. So I was a drummer in a musical band. We played all around the Indianapolis area. And the guys in the band, whenever we'd go on a break, well, we didn't take a break because we were too hyper and too young, we would wrestle. And we would do it in the house. We would drop kick each other. We would throw people around, you know, hip tosses. And we didn't know what we were doing, except we seen it on TV. Nobody ever got hurt. It was a lot of fun. And luckily the parents weren't around at the time, or they would hold us to stop. We probably wouldn't have anyway. But we just got teaching ourselves, really. And I never did do the backyard wrestling.
Oh, okay. Now, were you, you said you were a drummer in a band. Was this a rock band?
Yes. It was called The Emperors. And we made, we'd had a high school battle of the bands back then. They used to have battle of the bands locally. And we won in 1965. By the way, I don't know if I told you, I'm 71. I'm older than you are.
Oh, well, you have aged gracefully.
Oh, stop it. So anyway, I played music. We played around, and we made like $250 for the whole band. We made like $50 each. And we'd play Friday and Saturday nights, and we made about $100 each a weekend, and that was great money back then. So we were doing pretty good, and when we won the Battle of the Bands, WIFE radio station here in town had a guy named Tom Mathis that he was like the morning mayor of music, I think they called him, and he was on in the mornings, and he also on the side did announcing for Dick the Bruiser's wrestling company down at 7-Eleven North Pennsylvania in Indianapolis. He was the ring announcer. So when we won the Battle of the Bands, it was at the Indiana Roof Ballroom, and he was the DJ there. And he would introduce the bands and stuff. And when we finally won, he says, I tell you what, I want to book you guys. I want you guys to play around town. I got the connections, and we'll do some booking. And I said, okay. So he says, I can't go with you, but I'm going to have this guy go with you that will make sure you get there, tell you where to go, who to see, collect the money, make sure you get paid, get the money, pay you guys. And I said, okay, well, who's this guy? And he says, a guy named Ray Heenan. I said, oh, okay. And he was about 2 or 3 years maybe older than us, and might know him now as Bobby Heenan.
Oh,
but he ran
yes.
with us. Yeah, we worked with – that was in, 60 to probably 69, 70. And he would be at the Indianapolis fairgrounds at the Coliseum, and that's where they had wrestling matches at. And he came out, gathered their coats up at the ringside, where the wrestlers took their coats off and jackets, took them to the back, and that was pretty much all he did. And that was when I started to get a little bit more connected with wrestling through him, and I seen where he was finally making the step up further and further into the wrestling business. Now, all at once, I started seeing him on TV. I said, that's fantastic. So I watched everything he ever did. Whether he knows it or not, he was a mentor of mine. And a really funny guy, but I got outrageous stories I probably can't tell on here of what he used to do when we went on locations playing music. Because while we played, he went off other places. And he was a wild man.
Wow, fantastic. I know that at one point, Bobby Heenan, in his early career, came across some broken drumsticks, and he sold them to some high school girls and said that they once belonged to Ringo Starr.
Oh, yeah, I could believe that.
Yeah.
But he, when he really calmed down, and I wasn't really hanging around with him then, was when he finally got married to Cindy. And, boy, she put the old ball and chain to him, and all he knew then was just wrestling. He wasn't out messing around. He was a great husband, I guess. I wasn't married to him,
oh.
but I guess he was a great husband.
Well, no, I recall stories of Bobby the Brain telling stories about him drinking with Andre the Giant in New York City. That was kind of wild.
Yeah. Yeah, and the last time I seen him, in Indianapolis, anyway, we were downtown at the City County Building where the jail is. And not me and him, but me and my wife was down there. I can't remember what for. I probably had a ticket. I don't know. But anyway, he came off the elevator, and he goes, "Oh, Daryl, how you doing?" You know, we shook hands and hugged and all this stuff. And I said, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "Oh, I'm here to get one of the wrestlers out of jail." And I said, "Oh, what happened?" He goes, "Rape charge."
Ooh,
He told me who it was. I'm not going to say who it was, but he said the guy ended up not having a bond, and Dick, the Bruiser, gave him the bond money to get him out. And since there is no bond, he said, "We're partying tonight." So he took off. He took off with the money, and I don't think he ever did give it back.
Wow, that's something.
No, it was crazy back then. Like now, it's all business. You got to be a businessman. Oh, yes. You need to be where you're going to be, when you say you're going to be there, and no questions asked. Just do what you're told.
Yes, well, the advent of the internet certainly changed things. What you broke into the wrestling business in the late 60s and 70s, the internet, yes, and
right.
Videos.
Yeah,
wow.
The first time I remember what was the Hacksaw and the Iron Sheik out running around, and they got busted together, but they were supposed to be fighting each other and hating each other. That was kind of eye-opening.
Yeah. It was very hard to remain in kayfabe then when the internet came out. yes.
Now, when I was a kid, too, just able to drive, they had, you know, like I said, wrestling matches locally. We had all of them here. And we would go over to JoJo's Cafe over on the west side here. And I heard at the hotel that was in the very vicinity of JoJo's, that's where all the wrestlers stayed at. So we went over to JoJo's, and we seen everybody that was on the cart. We seen Sensational Sherry. British Bulldogs were in there with... I think Owen Hart, all the people from back there, they were all in JoJo's at different tables, sitting there talking to each other, drinking a beer, and Bret Hart got so drunk, he ended up passing out at the table, and we just looked at, you know, we were kids, just kind of understanding the way wrestling is, and saying, these guys all get along together,
Wow, Sensational Sherry was there, huh?
And she dressed out of the ring just the way she dresses in the ring.
Holy smokes, that's very good.
Yes.
Did you have any conversations with her, Sensational Sherry?
It seemed like she had a couple of good-looking girls with her, but they just kind of walked with her. You know, I don't know, it could have been like a bodyguard or something, or it could be her favorite friends to be around. I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't recognize them.
All right. Huh. Well, Daryl, when you were in that high school band, did Gary and the Pacemakers, or maybe the Royal Coachmen, or perhaps the Who, or the Cream, or maybe even Blue Cheer have an influence on you?
You got to even go back further than that. It was those were mainly in the 70s, I think, maybe getting in from 69 to 70 or so. We'd started in 65, so our people then were the Beach Boys, Duane Eddy, some of the, you know, guitar work, and a lot of times we played a lot of the Sandy Nelson, what was it called? Wipeout, things like that. That never had singing to it because we never really had a singer. And later, when we finally started doing some singing, then we started off into the Beach Boys, and then we went into all the Beatles stuff, of course, came around in 65, 66, and we got off into there. But as far as the real heavy metal, we did that going into the 70s, and we changed our names from the Emperors back then, which if you Google Bobby Heenan and Emperors, all that stuff would come up about us, you know, him managing us. But when we finally got into the hard rock, the Emperors just didn't ring. So we had to change our name to, like, Cream, which was a one-syllable band and easy to remember. So we changed our name to SMAK, S-M-A-K. And we made a few songs. We made a few records back then, but didn't go anywhere except Round and Round and Around.
Wow, that's fantastic. Are there any 45s of Smack available?
I don't know if the 45s are, but they re-released a, what was it called? Something Motown, Indie Motown of the 60s. And it's a three DVD disc set that just got released, I think, about 2 or 3 months ago. And they shoved two of our songs in on Motown. I don't know why. Somebody had to be drinking.
Fantastic. What did you think when Iggy and the Stooges first came out in 69 with their album Raw Power?
I went up and seen them at in Chicago at the Opera Theater, I think, or something like that. And it was a great show. Him and I believe Alice Cooper was on the same show.
Alice Cooper.
It was great.
Still tweeting. Yes. Holy smoke. to hear someone in the wrestling business who saw Iggy and the Stooges, boy, it's a very rarity. I'm glad you had the opportunity to see that.
Well, we had to go up there and do it. But I started getting off into the music area. I started getting into promotion. We promoted about three shows here in town. We had Cactus and, let's see, well, we brought Alice Cooper into town at Busch Stadium, which was an outdoor event at the ballpark back then, too. And I tried doing all kinds of odds and ends things that I love music, but it kept me away from wrestling. So I kind of ended up tailgating or back around into wrestling again because, well, believe it or not, you know, a guy like me, we got to make a living. So I got into, because audio was great back then. You got a left speaker and a right speaker, RCA plugs and all that stuff. Well, when video came in, it was one more RCA plug, a yellow one. And there we had to go, back then we had to go and audition at different clubs all around Indiana to get a job. They always wanted to see an audition. So we had that extra plug in where we videotaped ourselves playing and took the tape around with a TV set, and we auditioned video-wise and audio-wise. So we didn't have to go and set up. They could hear us, decide not to use us then instead of us going there and hearing us live and then say, well, we don't need you. So I got into the video business, and a friend of mine started Video Shack. It was called Video Shack here in town. I started working for him and teaching people how to sell VCRs and VHS and things like that. And I worked for him, I think maybe 5 years, six, something like that. And then I started started off on doing my own. So I opened up my own store, and I bought a couple of his from the money I made working for him, of all things. Bought a couple of his stores and started running them. And then I ended up, believe it or not, within probably 3 or 4 years after that. Now, this is in the heyday of videos, and I ended up with 19 stores. So I was busy.
Wow.
Now, Dan Garza, Diamond Dan, you've talked to him before, I believe. Great guy.
Uh-huh.
And he, at the time, wanted to promote some of the OVW matches up here in Indiana. So him and Rip Rogers, another guy that does training down there, used to be a wrestler. Diamond Dan used to be a wrestler. Now he teaches. Rip Rogers teaches. And anyway, they wanted to bring some matches up here and put them in local areas. And any place I had a video store at, he wanted me to sell the tickets to it. He called me one day on the phone. He said, we got a show going on, close to where one of your stores are. Do you mind if you want to sell advance tickets to it? I said, sure. So I would sell the advance tickets at the store, or my employees would, and then I would take it over there to him that night, get in free, and give him the money, and I collected. So I can't remember what exact year that was. It was in 95, I'm not sure. in the 90s. And anyway, they did the OVW shows up here. And great, the stars that was in OVW then is now been on TV right now. And they're the major stars. And Rip Rogers was the trainer down in OVW. And that guy, to let you know, has made many, many wrestlers a millionaire.
Wow. I mean, I know back in the 90s, the VCR was still around, you know, and it wasn't later until the DVDs came out. Did you ever have any female wrestlers stop by your store to make a promotion and help sell tickets? Any female wrestlers at the time?
No, not any female wrestlers, but at three of the grand openings, pardon me, we got bad weather around here, but at some of the grand openings, we would have Jimmy Hart came to one, Hillbilly Jim came to three grand openings, I believe. I forget who else, somebody, there were some other, no, I never had no females, though. But what at the time, if we sold, which we were selling Coliseum home videos, we would sell X amount of videotapes from our distributor, and we would get co-op money, which made us put money in the bank account of our distributor, and then he would pay for the people to come out and promote, of course, Coliseum video or and hope you know a grand opening or whatever we wanted to use them for. But we actually never had to pay for the stars to show up. We just had to buy videotapes, and we bought 100 videotapes. We get so many dollars, and that went towards bringing up one of the stars out to our store. And we did that quite a bit. And then there was a such thing as VSDA, Video Dealers Software Association, every year in Vegas. I started going to that, flying out there, and over in the corner of L.A. Hilton, or Anyways, the Hilton Hotel, I forgot what the name of it was out there, but the Hilton had all the movie studios there. They had Coliseum videos set up in a corner, and they would have every day about four or five wrestlers in there signing autographs. And I got picture taken with I got a picture taken with Shawn Michaels when Diesel was his manager or whatever he was. I met Macho Man, met all the classic stars, got my picture taken with them, and even some videotape. Macho Man, this was when cell phones just first started coming out, and I had one because I love electronics. And I gave Macho Man, I said, would you talk to my wife on the phone? And we was at the Vegas Hilton. I guess that's what it's called, Las Vegas Hilton. And I gave him the phone. He talked to my wife on the cell phone. Really, really nice guy. And I haven't seen any of them that was an actual ass. They were all great people. Of course, they're on their best behavior, too, because Coliseum Video was there promoting them.
Yes.
I had a lot of fun.
Well, as long as the Macho Man didn't get wind or think that you were hitting on Miss Elizabeth, he was a nice guy, yes.
Yeah, that's true.
You had one
but anyway,
of the
I got a lot of, old pictures from back then. You know, to show, you know, who I met and everything. And it's the greatest thing ever. Now, of course, back then you never had a cell phone with a camera on it. In fact, I don't even think they sell cell phones anymore. They're selling cameras that you can actually talk to people on. Is the way it is.
Oh yeah. Yes.
But everybody
it's amazing how rapidly it's progressing. Yes.
And you
the
never
communication.
See. Yeah, and you never see a phone company, I don't care who it is on TV anymore, ever tell you how great the quality of the phone call is.
Oh, yeah. Never. I mean, Daryl, I remember the age of phone booths, you know, and none of the kids today know what a phone booth is.
I think you may find one in a barn find, maybe.
Yes, yes. Someday a show like American Pickers is going to find a phone booth on one of those antique shows. Yes.
Yeah. Why do you stick your finger in that dial? What does that do? Nothing. Just turns around.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway.
None of the kids wouldn't know what the coin slot was for, you know, the coin slot at the bottom of the coin.
I don't think they ever had the pennies. They were always nickels, weren't they?
Oh, yes. Yes. And one of the most seminal moments, I believe myself from a wrestling podcast show host, one of the seminal moments in sitcom history was on Gilligan's Island when Jim Backus, or Mr. Howell, was talking into a coconut wooden payphone, and he checked the coin slot for coins.
I thought you was going to say Mr. Magoo, but you said Mr. Howell.
No, Mr. Howell, yes. I just mentioned that because that was one of Sign Guy's favorite moments in sitcom history. Sign Guy liked that, yes.
That was his favorite?
Yes.
Sorry to hear that. Hey, we had a show last night. He's seen all of it at HPW. That was I'm changing the subject just for a second. Hold on. I think he might tell you about whenever he gets back home. Might tell you about it on the phone or on the podcast. But we had a fans brought the weapons match, and it was crazy.
That was between Cousin Cooter and Scarecrow.
Yeah. And Scarecrow got a big surprise there, and he was just about in tears when he came back. They called him out during the intermission. Jerry Wilson, the HPW owner, called him out, and he didn't know what was going on because just 2 weeks or 2 months ago, he turned from face, which he's been face there for years. Everybody loved him and stuff. So then he finally became the bad guy. And that was last month. And then I started managing him. I always manage the bad guys, the heels. And so anyway, he was glad, you know, I'm getting to manage him now, and he's going to be, you know, doing a little change up, which he was, I think, ready for. But he went out there, and they give him the HPW Hall of Fame Award. And that just threw him because he thought, man, being a heel, I'm not going to ever get this. And he came back to the back showing everybody, and heck, he was just about ready to cry.
Oh, my gosh. How long had Scarecrow been wrestling at HPW up to that point of his heel turn?
I think it's been over 13 years. It could be 15. He told me, and I don't pay no attention.
Wow. Now, are there any truth to the rumors that a cheese grater was used in the match last night? A cheese grater?
Yes, sir. There was a cheese grater. There was a... What else was there? There was keyboards of a computer. A keys went flying when they got hit over the back with it. And then there was a steel mallet, a little short one, maybe a foot long, and it was a real mallet. And then there was three or four crutches. And then they were fighting all the way to the back of the place through the crowd and ended up into the men's room. And they were in there for a little while, and I finally went over there. I thought, man, I got to check on I managed Scarecrow. I got to go check on him. I opened up the door, and here they came out. Scarecrow got knocked out onto the floor, and Cooter came out hauling a toilet.
What?
Yeah, he brought it all the way to the ring, set it up in the ring, and then they went back into the ring, started fighting again as they fought all the way from the back to the ring again. Set it up in the ring. They got back into the ring again, and Cooter stuck Scarecrow's head inside of it and stood him up on it and about drowned him.
Oh, no. Oh boy.
He didn't smell too good either after that.
How big of a crowd was there last night? How big would you say the paying audience was?
Oh, they look like they could be at least 225 pounds each, I guess.
Holy smokes, wow.
They were a big crowd. Now, I don't know. I know there was at least a couple hundred. I never got a count. But it was also Fireman's Cheer Fund, and then people always bring in slightly used or new toys. And the sponsors of the show, you know, throughout the year, they also donate some money and stuff. And I don't know how many bicycles he's had in the back of that place that the sponsors had bought. I would say there may be 50 of them. And then there's a whole table full of nothing but toys that people brought in. And then they had a raffle that other sponsors, you know, they had Colts tickets, they had Pacer tickets, they had a chair that had HPW, you know, painted on it. And I don't know whether it sold for like $80 or something like that. But all that money goes in to kids around there that just don't get very much for Christmas. He's done that for 18 years. He's done that for 18 years, and this year is also his 21st anniversary of being in business. Great guy. Great, great guy.
Wow. Well, I did manage to go on Facebook to HPW, and I saw Jerry posing with some bicycles. It looked like he had about 25 bicycles there, 25 of
them.
Yeah,
I never did count them. There was a long row of them.
Oh,
now,
okay.
They're also going to – now, the next show in December, which I think is the 7th, that's another Fireman's Cheer Fund. So hopefully everything doubles, if not more. Last year, he brought in during the two shows a little over $4,000 worth of items and money.
Wow, fantastic. Holy smokes.
So I don't know whether to congratulate him that he's the greatest or the fans.
Well, now, is it a combination show of the Fireman's Fund and also an acknowledgement of longtime HPW announcer Jerry Jones?
Wilson.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw Jerry Jones on the advertisement. Terry Jones, I mean, Terry.
Jerry
Jones.
Jerry Wilson.
Okay.
I don't know who Terry Jones is.
I guess my eyes were failing me this morning. Okay.
Maybe
that's
I don't know the guy myself, yeah.
Well,
no, anyway, Jerry
I'm
Wilson owns it.
Oh, he does, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Now,
Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, also, your sign guy, he got up into the ring also last night. And set up a bunch of chairs. Oh, by the way, there was like 50 chairs thrown into the ring, too. Every chair that was available that wasn't somebody sitting in, it flew into the ring on top of Cooter that was laying flat on his back.
Wow.
It was a mess. I know, I'm glad I didn't have to clean it up. And then there was blood all around the outside of the ring.
Uh-oh. What did Chicken think about all of this? The chicken that Cousin Cooter carries.
He stayed in the corner. He didn't get hurt.
Oh, okay.
I wore his cowbell. It stayed there too.
Whoa.
But
it
was a heck of a show.
My partner on the show, Sign Guy, has not fared so well in the couple of years. I managed to go out there 1 year with Sign Guy. I think it was in 2011. And I myself had a quattro thumbtack match against Dave the Beast Barnett. But Sign Guy has never fared very well. He once, it was a couple years ago when he got thrown over the top rope and his head hit the concrete. I hope he did better this year.
Well, he got a fireball in the face.
I know. Jeez.
This year he challenged anybody, any fan up there that wanted to come up and arm wrestle him. And I'm not sure what started that except him. And then he finally looked back and there was like four or five firemen, pretty good sized guys that was in the back. And he challenged one of them to come up and, you know, in arm wrestling. So they set up a table, you know, on some chairs and stuff, got their elbows on there. And it was back and forth and it was tense. It was just amazing. And then all at once, firemen took over, pinned Sign Guy, and he flew back on the mat and got mad, and he went over and picked up the the fireman and slammed him through the table.
What?
So wow. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure who really won.
Holy smokes. Well, I guess Sign Guy must be working on his squats and lower body strength if he picked
might
up
be.
A fireman.
Yeah, he might be trying to work on his tipper rent, too. He kind of got excited.
Oh, well, that's weird because out here, both Sign Guy and myself used to go to Tulalip Championship Wrestling in near Marysville, Washington. And Sign Guy once challenged a lady wrestler out here known as the Powerhouse Princess, the lovely Lila Lodge. And Lila managed to arm wrestle Sign Guy and get a win out of him. Sign Guy must really have been doing a lot of curls to take that fireman to what do you think, a two-minute match, arm wrestling match?
It could have been, yeah, about 2 minutes. I mean, the crowd, and believe it or not, a lot of the crowd was behind Sign Guy. I couldn't believe it. I thought he'd be home, you know, behind the fireman, the local fireman. But they were cheering for Sign Guy. Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with them fans, but...
Daryl, are you here saying now that Sign Guy has kind of turned from semi-heel to semi-face?
Don't think he meant to. I think the fans just, they may appreciate him showing up once a year.
Well, you know, I think once you take a header onto the concrete and you take a fireball in the face, fans start to realize, you know, that maybe this guy has a stick-to-itiveness. Yes.
Yeah, he does. He stuck that fireman to it.
Wow.
That will be on YouTube probably later this week. The match will.
Oh, good. Wow. Okay.
It's on the Dreaded D. Rose report.
Oh, I got to write that down. The Dreaded D. Rose report. Okay.
That's on YouTube.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, now, Daryl, can you tell us if Stompin' Steve Bragg was in action last night? Stompin' Steve.
I don't know what he was doing at his house, but I didn't see him there.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right.
He might have been stomping at home. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well,
one time I seen him was probably 3 years ago around this time, too. Him and Jerry had some kind of something cooked up that I didn't know about, but I had brought in a birthday cake for Jerry. I really did, a big birthday cake. We all ate it in the back, and he ate some, and the firemen were there, and Steve was there, Stompin' Steve was in the back. I never knew the guy, went over and met him, big guy, real big. And at the end of the match, we had an arm wrestling match there where myself and Diamond Dan was trying to take over HPW, and if Dan would have won the arm wrestling thing, we had complete control over HPW. And, of course, he didn't win. So after that, I went back. I tried to make up to Jerry because I didn't want to get fired from there because he's going to kick us both out. I went out, brought a piece of birthday cake out to him. I sang happy birthday to him, and he had one of the Stompin' Steve came behind me, pinned my two arms behind me, and Jerry had one of the firemen come over and smash the cake in my face, rub it all around, and then Jerry turned around and had a pair of scissors in his pocket and cut a piece of my hair off, a large chunk of it.
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, it's a nice place to work at sometime.
Holy smoke. What was the flavor of the cake?
Oh, it was pretty good. It was a whole sheet, and it was like white and white, I think. It had the HPW logo on the front of it, top of it.
Okay. All right. So you're talking probably Angel Food Cake. Angel Food Cake, yes.
Yeah, for the double food guy. Yeah.
I'll be darned. That is a wow. Well, now, you know, that match between Cousin Cooter and Scarecrow, it kind of sounds like a seminal moment in Hoosier Pro Wrestling history when Ox Harley picked up a steel chair with a cloth wrapped around it. He soaked it in kerosene, and Ox lit the chair on fire and brought it down on Pastor Payne's head during a barbed wire and table salt thumbtack match. Were you there at that barbed wire table salt and thumbtack match?
I was lucky I wasn't. I'm glad I wasn't. Ooh. That would have been a little bit frightening.
Yes. Yes. Well, they managed to shake hands afterwards. Both were bloodied, but that fireball that sign guy took, it kind of sounds like that steel chair that Ox Harley lit on fire. Yes.
Well, I don't know how Jerry did the fireball himself, but it was a large one. In fact, it just about got Jerry, too.
Uh-oh. Uh-huh. Holy smokes.
And I wish they would have had the lights out when that happened. Oh, that was impressive.
Oh, man, that would have been something. Jeez. Yeah. Holy smokes. Well, Daryl, before you became a manager in wrestling, did you yourself lace up the tights did you yourself have a few matches as a wrestler?
Everything I put on is tights. Very tight. I'm about 240 pounds. And I've worked out for years and just never has done any good. But anyway, I worked out. And my son has got arms about the size of my waist. Great big monster guy. But as far as me, the first time I've gotten to the ring is, believe it or not, I met, like I said, Diamond Dan years ago. And we would go to some shows, wrestling shows around town, and we'd meet up with some of the local wrestlers, and I got to meet them, and I met up with Flash Flanagan. And he says, you know, you talk awful lot. Yeah, so am I supposed to be quiet? I'll do it. And he says, no, he says, I'd like for you to get a hold of Diamond Dan. This was, I met him at Planet Fitness after I met him. We went to Mick Foley show when he was doing his stand-up, and got our pictures taken and stuff. But anyway, he says, I want you to get a hold of Diamond Dan if you can. I want to cook up a show for us down at HPW. I said, okay. And he said, I want you to be, I was going to be an attorney. I said, all right. So when we went down there, probably it might be 4 years ago now, to do that show, and it went on from 6-7 months, but that was the very first time I ever stepped in a wrestling ring, and I was scared to death. I can't show it. I cannot show it, but I went in there, you know, like I've been in there living the life, and did what I was supposed to do, and that's been about it. I've just been managing ever since because they needed I don't think they had a heel manager back then, but some of the guys couldn't talk very good, you know, on a mic. And the other people that did talk, I just kind of helped them. I said, the only reason I'm there to manage you guys is not to cheat, not do anything except watch the referee to make sure he does the right call, counts right, and doesn't do a quick count, and just stays out of the way. Let you guys go at it. Of course, every once in a while, I get a little excited, and I have to pull a referee's leg or something like that. One time I was going to pull the guy's shoe off and throw it across the ring, the referee, just to make him get up and go get it, and then I was going to do my little shenanigans. But last night I managed three guys in three different matches. I managed Scarecrow at the main event, the last match, and then I managed I think it was about, this is my second month of managing Buck Sexton.
Oh,
and
wow.
He just went from face to heel.
Okay.
So I'm helping him as much as I can. And then Duke the Nuke, which I don't know how tall he is. I don't know if he's 6'4", 6'5", 350 pounds. I don't know. A monster of a guy. And that sucker turned on me last night and liked to beat the crap out of me.
What?
Just because. I don't know what his problem was. I don't know what it is. But I think he's got a problem maybe with Buck.
Okay.
Me managing him. I don't know what the problem was, but we're going to have to get this settled.
Yeah, boy, about 6'4", 300, and you say 50 pounds?
Oh, man, monster.
That sounds like a wrestler we have out here named Sasquatch.
He could, yeah. If he sat on you, that's what would happen.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That definitely needs to get resolved pretty quickly. Holy smokes.
Scared the crap out of me. He reared back to hit me, and I thought, there goes my dentures. And I don't even have any.
Oh, wow. Did he get in a forearm with you?
Well, luckily the referee was up there, and he grabbed the guy's arm, and I thought I was going to have to go off on him, but I didn't. I just got out of the ring.
Wow. Okay.
So it's
all
an
right.
Adventure down there.
Besides arm wrestling the fireman, did Sign Guy referee any matches last night?
No, I don't know. No, I think he probably wanted to, but I don't believe he refereed anybody there.
Wow, okay. All right, fantastic. Okay.
But I try to think up stuff that's never been done before. And because I've watched wrestling for minus probably 64 years, and I know a lot of things that went on that's happened, but a bunch of things that's in my mind that I haven't seen happen in the ring that I want to make happen.
Can you give us an example?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I'll give you one. Like I said, normally people pull out the referee when they go to do a count. But like I said, I'd pull his shoes off and throw them away. And he gets mad at me. And I want to see, I don't know whether this has went on or not. You've been around wrestling probably as much as I have. I want to see the referee, when they do a bad count, another referee comes out and corrects the guy, and all at once, the next show, we have a referee versus referee. And it's going to
be
refereed by a third referee.
Ooh, hey, that sounds spicy.
Yeah, I want to do some silly crap like that. And, of course, we did the thing. I know there's been matches where the kitchen sink's been thrown into the ring. I think I've seen that on ECW.
Uh-huh.
But I never seen a commode get thrown in there.
No. In fact, you know what I'd like to see is a double referee tag team match, mixed gender. One boy, one girl, one boy, one girl. Referees.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. Yes.
We
that
did have
good.
A mixed gender. We had a mixed gender tag match last night. Not referees, though. And those women are beautiful that come in down there. We had three of them. Beautiful.
Who were the women involved in that?
The mixed tag team was Jay Lee and Kaylee.
Okay.
One of them is from OVW. I'm not sure whether both of them are or not.
Wow.
And then there was a Miss Courtney comes out there with her boyfriend. And she's like the Macho Man's Miss Elizabeth, where she gets mistreated and the people there just hate the guy because he pulls her around and puts him in front of her, you know, whenever he gets ready to get blasted in the face. And it's just wonderful. Oh, they love it. If you can make those fans matter, that's the only thing I want to do is make the fans matter, then hell at me, because then I did a good job.
Oh, I tell you, those females that make it in wrestling, especially the OVW wrestlers, they're very tough. Boy, I don't want to mess with them.
And a lot of the people from there, I don't know if you've heard of Grindhouse Wrestling, but some of the people are from there.
Grindhouse,
I think
I've heard
they're down
of
in
it.
Jeffersonville, maybe. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, on Sign Guy's Sign of the Times, the promos that he does every Saturday, and he's up to over 400 now, he often mentions Cameron Starr, a wrestler named Cameron Starr, giving him a forearm. And, boy, he saw stars.
Oh, well, last night he might have, after he mistreated the guy, the fireman, I can't remember the fireman's name, but Jerry Wilson came up into the ring and picked up his metal tray. He always, you know, carries a sign on, I believe. Picked up a metal tray and hit him probably 10 times over the head with it.
Ow!
So Sign Man may have a extra large cranium when he gets back.
Holy smoke. I'll have to keep an eye out for that. Yes.
Yeah, look out for lumps. Yeah, he might have lumps.
All right. Okay. Oh, holy smokes. 10 times, boy. Jerry Wilson, boy. Okay. When do you think, speaking of trend setting, and you mentioned something you've never seen in the ring, when will Jerry Wilson see the debut at HPW of the first transgender wrestler?
I'm not sure. We had the I don't know if there's any around here anyway. Now we have transgender matches are they transgender?
Gender.
Anyway,
fluid.
We have the mixed. Yeah, we have the mixed male female matches.
Oh sure, yes. But when will you see the first female that has been surgically altered to be a male, or vice versa?
I don't know about vice versa, but the vice. I'm not sure. Is anybody other than Nyla Rose or somebody like that? Anybody other than her advertising that part? I'm not sure.
Probably not. No. I mean, the first inkling of that life of. I can't use the word lifestyle. Probably gold dust, gender bending type thing, androgynous. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Right. No, I haven't seen anybody around that way.
Okay.
Now,
all right.
To let you know, I've never been PC correct. I've never been political correct. Anybody knows me, I'll say whatever it is, you know, about them, about the other guy sitting next to them. And for some reason, I guess I'm old because nobody goes off on me.
Well, what did you think about Donald Trump being the first U.S. president to have experience in the WWE wrestling ring and actually clotheslining Vince McMahon? I'd say that helped him win the ring. Yes.
Yeah, and then he beat him on his little forehead, too. Did you see that? Yeah. But I think it was great. It was nothing to do with wrestling, but I always wanted to see. I don't like attorneys. Of course, I had to be one to get in the HPW, but I don't like attorneys, and I don't like lawyers or politicians. And I always wanted somebody to get in there that was a businessman, because I think the U.S. needs to be ran like a business, and he just happened to be the guy.
Oh, yeah, they got tired of what was happening in Washington. You know, they needed a straight shooter. Yes.
Yep. So I was all for him. Still am.
Okay. Well, Daryl,
so
today...
With HPW, by the way, they're doing just to throw a little plug in here real quick, they're doing another show, like I said, December 7th, I believe. And if anybody around in that area, down south in Indiana, it doesn't matter how far, and then make it over to the show, just bring something for the kids. That's all.
That'd be nice.
Yep.
And that would,
and we'll put on a hell of a show.
Yes, and it's Pearl Harbor Day. You got to remember that. Yes.
Oh, yeah, December 5th, 1946.
41.
What was Pearl Harbor? 41, yeah.
Boy, there's sure not many veterans left that saw the actual event unfold at Pearl Harbor. Only a handful now, and they're dwindling fast. Yes.
Now, here at this high school, I'm in Plainfield, Indiana, by the way. We got a Plainfield High School, and they do a honor flight. And they fly people, I believe, to Washington, D.C. to see the sites and all this stuff. I believe it's all the veterans, that's no charge, that was in certain wars and stuff, and then they fly them back here, and they have a big celebration over here. It's only about two or three blocks from the house, about two or three times a year.
Wow, fantastic. You know, even the Korean War veterans are getting up to the mid-90s now. early 90s and mid-90s. Gee whiz. Okay. Wow. Well, Daryl,
well, now you depressed everybody.
No, I'm a veteran myself. I'm a 20-year veteran. Yes.
Oh, yeah? Fantastic.
Yes. Well, Daryl, it's been very nice talking with you. At this opportunity, I'm going to give you the chance to final plug anything you'd like to promote, your favorite beer, your favorite iced tea, or your favorite VCR. The floor is all yours.
I get the floor, and I guess the ceiling is the top as I can go. All right. Anyway, anybody that gets a chance, anybody that can, if you want to find out anything about what's going on in wrestling, if you're not sure, if you heard rumors, call the hotline, which has been going on for, I think it's getting awful close to 20-something years, Diamond Dan's hotline, which is on Facebook also. I think it's just called Diamond Dan hotline. But on the telephone, it's 317, and it's 335-4688, and it's updated. It's got three options on it. I think really all three are updated just about every day. Two options, myself and Randy Clemmy, good friend of mine, he updates usually in maybe around 9 or 10 in the evenings, every evening. And then I update it at noon the next day. And then Diamond Dan, I believe, updates at about 12 or 1 o'clock at midnight. So whatever's going on, we got it on there as soon as it comes out. And like I say, that's every day. The only other thing we got going is, or I got going, is YouTube channel, which is really nothing to do with me. It's got to do with wrestlers up and coming, wanting to be, and that's Dreaded D. Rose Report, which used to be an updated hotline I put on YouTube, but I quit doing that. It was too much because I just got tired of it. But anyway, I just started putting we got some OVW stuff on there. We got a lot of HPW, and what happened last night at HPW will be on there later this week. I usually put one match on a day. So you'll be able to see that melee that ended the match last night. And Side Guys match will probably be on there too. Well, it really wasn't a match. It was just him slamming somebody and getting upset. Well, that's really about it. Like I said, I'm down there just about every first Saturday of every month at HPW, and it's showtime is, I call it showtime, 7:45 usually, and I think the doors open about 6:30. And you can come in there, and Flash Flanagan is just about there every show, and he does one hell of a job down there, and he's the guy that's responsible for me getting my funky butt out of the house and actually doing something. And, of course, Diamond Dan is, too.
All right. Well, Daryl,
I think that's about it, unless you want me to advertise. I would advertise your show, but I'm already on it. It's too late.
Oh. Well, the pleasure's been on all this side of the table. And, Daryl, hopefully you can call back in January, and we will be having our 10th anniversary show. We're going to start taking applications for the 10th anniversary show of Turnbuckle Tomorrow.
Well, one thing, myself, and I congratulate you on that. One thing I wanted to do with Sign Guy this time, I didn't get a chance to do it, is I wanted a wrestling match with him, and I want to be the oldest rookie wrestler ever.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Well, I will try to make that happen. Yes. Somehow.
Okay.
Talk to Jerry Wilson about
that. Maybe we could do it over the phone. I don't know.
Over the phone match. Another trendsender.
There you go, yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, Daryl, it's been great talking with you, and good luck on December 7th. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Take her down, a gentle wind in you, a shot of fireball. turn the screw. I'm 40.